Welcome to the Intuitive Awakening Podcast. I'm your host, Deanna Riddick. I'm an author, teacher, and eternal seeker of truth. I am on a mission to spread metaphysical knowledge to help you awaken your spirit. If you want to learn how to open the door to your divine self, you are in the right place. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Intuitive Awakening. Thank you for joining me for today's episode. We have a lovely guest today. Shauna Thibodeau is joining us, and Shauna is a former mental health nurse turned spiritual mentor, meditation teacher, and co-host of the Naked Soul podcast. With over a decade of experience guiding inner work and holistic healing, she blends clinical insight with soulful practices to support women on deep emotional and spiritual journeys. Her book, The Light That Shines Through, introduces her signature five-step framework designed to help women release childhood trauma, regulate their nervous systems, and step into leadership with clarity and confidence. Welcome to the show, Shauna.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
I want to hear about the start of your journey. So you were a mental health nurse, but you're doing something that, I mean, it's not so far left. I would love to see, like, to hear about your journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So it actually started in nursing school, technically before that, because my journey stems from a history of depression and anxiety, which started around age 13, 14. And then that continued into my university years. And I was in nursing school when it kind of hit its peak. And I was like, okay, I need to do something about this. And luckily, I had the thought, if this is originating in my mind, I wonder if working with my mind can help it. Right. So then I decided the techniques that I knew of were like counseling, right? So I started there, actually. I went to a counseling appointment on campus. I didn't quite resonate with my counselor in that first appointment. I wasn't feeling enthused about counseling, but I had this very like synchronistic moment when I was waiting at the receptionist to book my appointment, where she had to take a phone call. And my eyes just happened to fall onto this stack of cards that was over to the right-hand side, and it was for a psychologist downtown. And the card had this beautiful tree on it, which just captivated my attention because I love trees. And I just picked up the card, and then the receptionist started talking again, so I just put it in my pocket. And then when I was on the way home, I pulled it out again, and it had this little like quote on the back, and something was drawing me to this card. So when I got home, I looked up his website and he had a meditation program. So he was a psychologist, but he ran what's called mindfulness-based stress reduction. It's an 8-week standard meditation program. And something drew me to it, and I just decided to take that program. I didn't even know what meditation was. And that's where my journey began. I took the program and I just fell in love with meditation.
So, okay. What many people talk about meditation, I mean, we've been hearing about it for a really long time. You know, many people now have it. It's kind of like standard practice for many people as a sort of, you know, stress relief for spiritual connection, for all sorts of different reasons. What was your meditation journey like? Because again, that's kind of, you know, that's something new for a lot of people and they don't know what to expect from that.
Mm-hmm. It's gone down so many different paths since. So it started with mindfulness-based meditation, which came from Jon Kabat-Zinn. He really brought meditation from the East to the West and into the medical field as well. So I started with just standard following your breath meditation and body scans, very mindfulness-based meditations. And what I found the benefit of those were is that when you are moving your point of attention to what's called an anchor, so either the breath or your body sensations, you start to gain awareness into your thought patterns more and more. And then basically you can start to say like, Oh, interesting. I seem to be criticizing myself a lot. Oh, interesting. I seem to like the thought of not being good enough or not even understanding meditation. Like I'm trying to meditate. I seem to be beating myself up in my mind. So you start to gain awareness into your thought patterns. And then they actually, that basically like loosens their grip a little bit. You start to see that it's just a story. And then the more that you come back to the breath, you're also experiencing these longer spaces in between thoughts, which then you're starting to dip into your true self and you're actually sitting and resting in peace and quiet, which for me, I had never experienced that before with depression and anxiety. I was like, wow. What is this peace, this quietness? And then from there, I actually started to get intuitive information start to come into my mind. Like it was in meditation where the idea to start my own business came. And I had just started nursing and I was like, whoa, what? And then from mindfulness, I've explored a lot of different styles of meditation. I've explored like chakra healing. It was in 2018 where I really got into prayer and co-creation and manifestation, and that really shifted things in my life as well.
So talk to me about kind of like these intuitive downloads, or I'll just call them downloads for our purposes. And I'm asking you about these because many people kind of have this expectation of what the experience is supposed to be like. You know what I mean? Like you see stuff on TV and and it might not necessarily appear that way, but I would like to know how you were receiving intuitive insights, number one, but number two, how did you trust the information? What was your, I guess I would like to really ask, what was your religious or spiritual background prior to kind of even, moving into meditation?
So no background in either. No religious background, no spiritual background. I'm like the baby of the family that has gotten into this kind of stuff. And what happened for me was the reason I could tell, or the reason that I thought it was maybe an intuitive nudge was I would be in meditation and my mind would be very calm and quiet. And then this random thought would just pop in where it's like it didn't stem from anything, it just came out of nowhere, and it would be a very almost like bizarre thought, like, where did that come from? Like, you want to start a business and you want to teach meditation, and I'm like, oh, okay. And the reason why I started to trust it was it continued to come up. So in various meditation sittings, it would continue to come up even on like long walks can also be very meditative. So it would start to pop in there and the idea wouldn't go away. That's basically, I didn't follow it at first. It took a little bit to follow it, but it kept nudging me. And then I almost felt like it almost felt like a bigger risk to not follow it because it was just always there. So I was like, if I don't follow this, I feel like I'm always going to wonder what if. So I might as well start to follow it and see what happens, basically. And then what I've seen over time is that it can lead you to the most miraculous places and the most miraculous journey that your logical mind couldn't have really come up with.
I ask you this because there are many people who do receive like these types of like downloads or information that, again, like you were saying, you can't necessarily rationalize, or it doesn't fit with what's going on in your life, whether it's from like a financial standpoint or a geographical standpoint or what have you, right? It's like that insight that you're receiving sounds almost ridiculous. So many people ignore it and they just go about their lives rather than take the risk, which I think is important that you said that because it does feel Earth is very real in a sense that we're human and we live here. And there's consequences to actions, right? Regardless. And so I think many people are really afraid to kind of take those steps because the risks and the consequences appear so much greater if we don't stay with something that we know and that feels very safe. So I'm wondering, How have you, I guess, has that voice gotten louder and more trustworthy as you've gotten along? Like, has that felt more safer than your logical mind?
I have shivers like when you ask this. It has definitely, like, I just love that question because I think it's something so many people can relate to. I had to make, so the first big jump was becoming a meditation teacher and then, and trusting that and just putting myself out there. But I was still nursing. So overall, it was still relatively safe. It was when I decided to leave my nursing job. That was the biggest jump for me and go like more full time and go all in on my business. That was around 2019. And I literally tell people it was the most terrifying thing for like probably a whole year. I was doing tapping, EFT tapping to calm my nervous system, combined with co-creation and manifestation practices, like pretty much on repeat within my mind, was either calming my nervous system, saying, "You are safe, you are safe. Let's keep trusting, let's keep trusting." And then what I found is it's kind of ironic. It has gotten easier because I have data now where I'm like, okay, we trusted in the past. We have so much data that that led to amazing things. Like it led me to leading retreats all over the world, to growing a seven-figure business. So I'm like, okay, we have a lot of data here, but it's kind of ironic. I feel like the universe kind of ups the ante slowly. Like they know you're willing to take risks. So it's like, okay, let's go deeper. So like even right now I'm like working with a lot of new risks, but I'm leaning on that data and that trust. And I just know that it led me to such amazing places before. So let's continue to trust our intuition.
I think it's a really good point when you kind of frame it like it's, having that data. Because in life, we need to have, we need to know, right? Again, we need to kind of see like, okay, if I do this from a logical standpoint, from an earthly standpoint, of course it's going to work out. It's going to lead me to A, B, C, and D. And yes, I feel financially secure. I feel secure all the way around, but trusting something that doesn't feel safe, but also there's no guarantees. There's absolutely no guarantees, and definitely it's like heightened risk in your life. It's very difficult for people, normal people, like just to get their head around willing to do something and know and trust that it's going to work out and work out better than you thought.
Yes, absolutely. And one tip I always recommend people to implement is what can you keep in your life that does provide some sense of safety? So, luckily with nursing, I was able to drop down to part-time and then I was able to drop down to casual. So, it was a semi-gradual shift. So, I always say to people, we don't need to do this like massive drastic change. You can continue working your job and start building your dream on the side, right? And then, is there a way to maybe drop down slightly and just drop down slightly so that we still have that maybe financial safety that can help us like regulate our nervous systems as we trust our intuition?
And the other thing I think to kind of mention here, and you can definitely speak about this. So when you got that piece of information and it was like this repetitive insight you were receiving, you didn't get the full script at once telling you like where to go, who to meet, where to purchase this, how things are going to look in 5 years at all. You only got that one piece of information. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was just like you want to be an entrepreneur and you want to help people in your own way. And I knew that meditation was one of them because it helped me so much. That was basically all I knew in the beginning. So then, slowly over a few months, I was like, okay, well, if I follow this, I guess the first step would to get certified in meditation, right? That would be the first step. That's what logically makes sense. And maybe build a website. So I actually started a blog. So those were the two things that I started with. And then it's just been like one stepping stone after another, and just getting connected with the right people. When I started my co-creation practice, which is most known as manifestation, I like to call it co-creation, but that was when I saw an increase in in synchronistic moments, connections, like meeting the right people at the right time. And it's just been this gradual unfolding, and it still is. Like, I don't know the next stepping stone, right? You just learn to trust and rest in it. And it's the most uncomfortable feeling ever. Like, I like to say that so that people can be like, oh, okay, it's like it's meant to feel this way, you know?
Definitely, it's very unknown, and I think that brings up, and this is logical, if you have a lot of fears because you don't know, that's a normal feeling to have, and it's okay to have that feeling because most people live in a way that for the, they want things to be consistent.
Yes,
They want to
we want to
know,
know.
yes, they want to know so that they can rest easy, so that they aren't super anxious or worried or making poor decisions to feel very, very safe. So I think, honestly, it is, it can be very scary to trust that inner voice because you just don't know how
Yes.
it's going to work out. Or
The
so
ironic thing is, I think a lot of people put false safety into things. And I even had an experience of that this year. But I think a lot of people put, like, in a relationship or in a job, we can feel very safe in them, but at the same time, we have no idea what could actually happen to that job. I know a lot of people have experienced that this year as well, like just randomly losing jobs, right? And it was like, whoa, this thing that I put safety in. So I think we need to like kind of just rattle that a little bit, that belief system a little bit, just saying like, you're choosing this because you feel very safe, but when you dig down and look at it deeply and honestly, anything could happen at any time, right? So, is it worth it to continue following this or following what maybe lights up our soul a little bit more, even though it's scarier? It could actually be the more secure route. It just doesn't feel or look that way.
And that's 100% true because even at my like day job, so many people just this year have lost their jobs. People who are like high performers, they've been at the company a long time, everybody loves them. And then boom, you go, you sign into work and it's like, oh my God, people are losing their jobs left and right. And it does make you question, where we're putting our energy, our time and our effort and what society has told us is the right way. And perhaps it does need some readjustment. So, okay, you said you were doing meditation, chakra healing, and a few other things that you tried. And I'm sorry, I missed the other techniques that you were learning.
It was prayer and co-creation, and then the other two that I really dove into was breath work and internal family systems, if you've heard of IFS. Which is a really good framework. It's like it's a therapy-based framework, but what it really relates to is inner child work. So it's my favorite framework for doing inner child work.
Can you talk to us a little bit about inner child work? I know a number of people have, even I'm not even gonna lie, I have hesitation with that type of, anything inner child, I'm like, I have a lot of resistance too as well. And I think a lot of adults, as you get older too, it's like, it's you made it through all of that and you feel comfortable where you're at in life, or maybe uncomfortable, but can you walk us through what inner child work is and why you think it's really important?
So I love using the IFS framework, and basically what it involves, it was created by a man named Richard Schwartz, who is a therapist. And the idea is that we have this center self within us, which is actually, think of it as like your unwounded self, your highest self, your soul self, and that's at the center. And then all around, we have what are called parts. Every emotion can basically be a different part. So you can have the angry part, the anxious part, the sad part, the hurt part, the rejected part. And all of these parts within us basically got formed and strengthened from past things that have happened. So, for example, you or I mean, I have a history of anxiety. So, definitely my anxious part got strengthened when I was in childhood and into adulthood. And it's basically situations from the past that strengthen this. And every part has its own belief systems and thought patterns. And then it stays within us. So, a situation might happen as an adult that we would call it triggers us, right? Like it makes us angry or it makes us anxious. But what's actually happening is it's kind of poking that part within you that is actually a part, it's a childlike part because it's kind of holding the emotions back from the past. So with parts work, that's another word for IFS, parts work, is you start to connect with these different parts within you. So if you get anxious, you can say, ah, here's the anxious part. And then you can start to actually have, you can either do it through journaling or meditation. And you start to connect with the part and you say, like, why are you anxious? What's coming up for you? What's making you anxious? And you explore that. And then you say, okay, what are the belief systems underneath this? Where did this come from? Where did this originate from? And you can start to peel back the layers and uncover, like, when the belief was formed, what the belief is. Maybe it's anxiety because you think the world is a scary place, right? Or it's anxiety because you feel you're not good enough. Like maybe you do want to follow your soul truths, but then you have this anxious, not good enough part within you that's holding that belief system. So then what you do is you form a relationship with this part and you start to basically befriend it. It's like your higher self is befriending this wounded part and you start to form a relationship and you almost start to like guide and encourage and help that part heal and shift its beliefs. And then it can let go of what it's called burdens, let go of the burden that it thinks it's not good enough, right? It finally releases that wound and that burden. And what the goal of IFS is to more have your center self leading your system more than your parts. Because when we're struggling, a lot of times our wounded parts are running the show and getting activated within our everyday life. And we want to guide all of these parts and have our center self leading the show. So that's kind of how the framework works.
So somebody wanted to tap in to try to get that insight. Let's say, I don't know, we have an anger problem and we want to know like where that started. How are we pinpointing exactly? Is it our higher self that's telling us where this started? Are we reviewing stories or recurring experiences that we've had in life that we're looking at to understand where this started? Like, how do we get into that?
We're actually more just allowing our intuition to come through because what I find is I love to do it through a journaling exercise in my online programs. So I give them very specific questions to explore. And I give everyone, we do this exercise for about 20 minutes. So we're really pausing and you're just allowing things to kind of drop in and flow. And what I find is that people are actually able to access where it might have come from or ideas of where it's come from. If they don't know, we always say you don't need to know where it came from for this work to be effective because you can form a relationship with a part without needing to know where it came from. Like you can start to speak to it and be like, it's okay that we don't know where this came from, but clearly you're experiencing a lot of anger. And then slowly over time, sometimes the part starts to trust you a little bit more, and that actually gets revealed to you over time.
What does it look like, I guess my question is kind of like, okay, again, just taking the example of like anger, how do you begin to kind of, I guess, deburden yourself? Because I would think as you get older, it gets a little bit harder because we have patterns or triggers, or the triggers are strong. They're very strong and they become a part of us pretty deeply. So, how do we see the effects of the work? What does it look like? How long does it take for most people to start seeing those changes in their lives?
What I do notice is every time we do the exercise, people feel immediate relief. So that's amazing. And we always say because we first write out our perspectives from the parts perspective on the left-hand side, we do this chart. We fill out the parts perspective over here, and then we work on connecting to our higher self and our center self, and we come up with like shifted perspectives and higher wisdom from that side of the chart. And then we say, how does it feel when we're kind of stuck over here in our parts perspective? And how does it feel when we're more connected to our higher wisdom? And people are like, wow, I can feel like such a relief. And so many of them say, I didn't even know I had this wisdom within me. Like, I didn't know that I had these answers within. But then also, exactly what you're saying, our parts. Oh, it takes a little bit longer to see them shift in deeper ways. And I've been exploring parts work now for about 5 years. And I would say I've just noticed so much differences in terms of taking action on things, like going outside of my comfort zone, even in like love and relationships, just showing up in a better way and having like better boundaries. And all of this comes from parts work over time. So I would say you can see an immediate shift and an immediate feeling of relief. And then the more that you do it, you can actually feel that you're operating less from the parts and you're starting to operate more from the center self.
So, when people are identifying their parts, I feel like there has to be a level of objectivity to be able to do that. Do you think that's the case, that that's necessary? Because we carry a lot of biases and we don't want to admit, certain things about ourselves. So I feel like that has to be present in the work.
Yeah, I think one of the benefits of how I present it, typically I do group work. So it's either through online programs or things like retreats. And we make sure we really create a safe space to start off. And we connect with everyone in terms of like sharing stories, basically to bring down the walls a little bit and to show that we're all moving through different things. And then when we do parts work, it's almost like, yeah, we all have these parts within us, right? So at first, I present, it's like a little diagram and it has our center self and then it has all the different parts around. So it's almost like options. It's not like you have to come up with the parts yourself. And then I just present it in a way that's like, explore the chart and circle the ones that you think might be operating within you. So it's presented in a gentle way where it's like exploratory. And then I always say, like, it's very normal to start circling them all. So then that creates, like, oh, okay, it's very human for us to all have these parts. So yeah, there's definitely, I think people need to feel really safe in order to be honest with themselves. And then I always say you can take this work deeper when you get home, right? You can, so much of my skills and practices are teaching people how to do the work on their own. So I teach a skill and then I'm like, this is how you do it at home in your bedroom for deeper work.
So you said earlier that many of your clients didn't have the awareness that they had this like inner voice, higher teacher, whatever we want to call it, inside of them. So I'm really curious. I know earlier you said you didn't come from like a spiritual or religious background. So how do you kind of define what that voice is then?
I think for many people, and for myself, it just feels like, especially with this activity that I'm describing, on the right-hand side, they would come up with much more loving perspectives, much more encouraging ways of viewing things, also more solution-oriented, because our parts tend to think in problem oriented and they just get stuck there a lot of times. So I use different prompts to guide people. Some of the prompts are like, what would your most loving self say to you? What would your most encouraging self? What would your wisest self say? What would actually be the highest solution or the like the best way to approach this right now? And people just start writing and stuff comes through and they're like, whoa, I didn't even know, yeah, that I had this within me. And I think they can tell how it feels different is it feels different than their everyday voice because so many of our everyday voices are critical and negative. And this feels a lot the opposite. It feels very loving and like a wiser part of you.
Do you ever come across anybody or clients who've been very resistant to, I don't know, trusting like the advice or guidance from their inner voice or even taking action on what they've hear?
Yes, I would say definitely trusting it and definitely taking action on it. I think it's one of the most challenging things to do, and I think it's one of the biggest lessons we're actually here to learn is tuning in to our inner wisdom and our soul truths and learning to trust and follow it. And I think we're in terms of like energetic shifts collectively that are happening, I feel like we're moving into times where it's becoming more and more important to follow our soul truths. I think that when we're not following our soul truths, we're feeling the effects of that more, or we're hitting blocks in our lives. Like things just aren't working when we're not following our soul truths. And I think collectively that has to do with some energetic shifts that have been happening over the last few years. And I feel like we're in a quite intense time right now. So I think it will be more and more and more important for people to start experimenting with following their soul truths and what's coming up to see where it guides them.
Do you think that, I know you said you teach people a skill and they do it at home, but do you feel like this being more in a group setting is more beneficial for people when they're kind of doing this kind of like inner work and self-discovery?
I think both are really beneficial. So I've learned a lot of practices myself in groups. Like even my first meditation program was in group. You know, my teacher training was in group. I've been in breathwork groups, and those are so beneficial. But I think it's even more important to develop an at-home practice because if we don't have an at-home practice, I don't think we're doing it consistently enough to start to see shifts within our lives. We need to almost be taking this on as a way of living, like incorporating spirituality in our practices as just a way of living. And that's where you can truly see the sustainable effects, like over time. So I think there's huge benefit to both. I think almost like learning and experimenting and exploring is so much fun in group for the very first time. And then taking those practices home with you and developing some sort of routines or rituals. And then going back into community whenever you're feeling that little nudge and like you need connection again.
Definitely. And I like that you said it's a way of life because what I've come across in a personal sense is many people segment, and a lot of us do this, segment our lives. You know, this is my work life, my family life, and et cetera. And we don't like them always to overlap. And spirituality is also kind of segmented as if it doesn't intersect or, you know, it has nothing to do with the rest of our life when, like you said, it's a way of life. It is a part of everything that you do, you know, but we have a tendency to kind of put it in its own little box that we attend to when we can, as opposed to making it, you know, embedded into how we operate in every day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. So, okay, I wanted to talk to you now We can either talk about prayer or co-creation. It can really be either one. I'm interested in prayer. I want to talk about this because, again, there's so much baggage with the word prayer. There's an expectation, like we all have the same, we all kind of hold the same image in our mind when we hear that word. It's like, okay, I'm on my knees praying to the male God above to get my problem solved or get the answers to my problems. But what does prayer look like for you?
So it's a really neat story, and it like connects with co-creation so much as well, because I actually found it very synchronistically and intuitively. A, when I first found spirituality and I was exploring spiritual teachers, I couldn't even, in books, I couldn't even read the word God. I had to jump over it. I had to like put in a different word because I was like, I don't know what that means. That it almost scared me, right? The word was a little bit too much for me. And then my brother passed away in 2018 from an accidental drug overdose. And what I found was when I went to try to meditate in deep grief, I couldn't focus on my typical meditation practices. I couldn't follow the breath. I couldn't feel like the body. So what ended up happening was I literally just laid on the ground, or in child's pose, almost like in a prayer position. And I just started saying, please send me healing. Please send me healing. Please send me healing. And I started to visualize this healing energy from above coming into my body. And I did that every day for for a few months after he passed. It was the only thing I could do. And it was like my anchor for getting through grief. And then what really started to happen, synchronistic moments started happening where I was running into people and just being guided into these communities and being connected with teachers that ended up bringing me great healing. So I was like, that was really weird. I was like, I almost feel like my prayer was answered. So that was my first experience with communicating with a higher power and almost feeling like it got received and it got answered. And it just like, then I became open to the word God because literally no other word felt as powerful as that word for what happened. And I was like, God is the only word that feels suiting for this experience now, which was just such a 180, right? And then that led me to co-creation because I was like, wait a minute, if I was praying and this happened, this seems similar to like what you do with co-creation and manifestation. So I dove into that and started practicing that very like every single day. And then that's when things just amplified even more. So that was my experience with
That's
prayer and co-creation.
I think that's very interesting. A lot of people have the resistance to the word God for obvious
Yeah.
reasons. But I would like to ask you this one question because I think it would be helpful for people to hear, and I'm really interested in it. Many people pray on a daily basis for help, for guidance, support, healing, what have you. And many people will tell you that they're angry at God, they hate God because their prayers didn't get answered. So I'm hoping, if you don't mind, you sharing what it was like to get your prayer answered. Like, what does it look like? Because people have an expectation of, what something is supposed to show up on your doorstep to solve all the problems immediately. That's what most people think it's supposed to look like. But if you could, if you don't mind sharing an example, whether it's like a synchronous event, so people can understand perhaps what it should look like for them.
Yeah, so one of the first things that happened was I was on my way to a work meeting, and it was one of those moments where you're trying to catch the elevator and you say, "Oh, hold the door." And the person in the elevator held the door, and it was my coworker. So we were on the elevator together, and then just random small talk, right? So I was like, "Oh, what are you up to tonight?" And she said, "I'm going to a goddess circle." And I was like, "What's a goddess circle?" And she was like, "I have no idea." And then I randomly said, "Can I come?" And she said, sure, why not? And I don't even know why that wasn't like me. I'm not like that to just ask to go to something. And what are the odds that we would have this interaction like on the elevator? So then I did have to make the initiative to show up. It was very out of my comfort zone, right? It was out of both of our comfort zone. We didn't even know what we were going to. So you have to, I feel, just follow these little things that might present to you and take action, like actually go to the things, check them out, go outside of your comfort zone. Another one happened where I found a book that really helped me in the grieving process, Light is the New Black by Rebecca Campbell. And she was hosting randomly. Again, it was so random. I look in my junk mail of a different email account that I never like look in, and I see that she's going to the Omega Institute to teach a retreat. And I was like, oh my goodness, like I loved this book. I randomly look up when the retreat is, and it fell right on the days that I was off from nursing, like perfectly. And I was like, whoa. And then again, I had to make the investment to go. It was a 6.5 hour drive solo. So I had to make a solo drive, make the investment. And then the leader from the Goddess Circle was running a retreat in Costa Rica, and I felt a nudge to go to that too. But again, that was a big investment. So literally, I was just like handing out investments here and there. But it was what was like, that's what felt true to me. And I, you don't know the outcomes. You don't know if it's going to be a hit or a miss. I was actually terrified to go to Costa Rica before the retreat. I was like, should I back out of this? Do I even want to go? And I was like, go. And it was such an amazing experience. So I think it's just following things that kind of stumble to you, but taking action, making the investments, going out of your comfort zone, doing things that scare you.
I think that's a really, it's a really good point because it always seems like you said, something will appear. Something will appear. It may not look like what you think the answer is supposed to be. It's like,
Yes,
I'm praying for this one thing and it has
exactly.
to show up this one way. And if it doesn't, then God did not answer me.
Yeah.
And like you said, you took the risks. You went outside of your comfort zone, what was normal. You're taking this risk and putting yourself in a position where you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what healing is supposed to look like. You don't know the people that you're going to meet, the connections. Like, you don't know what the benefit is going to be, but you trusted it, which I think is a big part. And I think, again, a lot of things go back to having trust or not trusting that something is really looking out for you or has your best interest at heart. Many people do not feel that way in this world.
Yeah, exactly. It can be very counterintuitive as well, 'cause say you're praying for your financial problems to be solved, right? Like you were saying, many people are just wanting it to kind of drop in. And what might be counterintuitive is you actually might need to invest and allow your account to drain even more in order to be connected and like start to follow a path that can then bring in more abundance and bring it like higher than the initial. So it's very, if you're investing, you're like, what is happening? Like, this was the opposite of my prayer, right?
Exactly. And I think it's a good point, counterintuitive, because it doesn't, again, from a logical standpoint, it's like, are you crazy? Why would I sabotage myself? Because that's the feeling and the experience of it. But man, it is for a number of people, it's just such a scary way to live. But my goodness, I what a wonderful way to live, knowing that you are being looked after and that something is looking out for you and has your best interests at heart, even if we can't see it.
Yeah, I truly believe that.
So I want to talk to you about co-creation. Walk me through what that journey looked like for you.
So after I explored, well, it was another very bizarre moment, actually. It was on that Rebecca Campbell retreat, and we were at a lunch table where there was a bunch of people that I didn't even know, and we were sitting at lunch with them. And randomly, a girl from across the table looks at me and says, "You need to get into law of attraction." And I was like, "Oh, okay, sure." And then we continue eating lunch and we're talking about different things. And I get up to leave and she says it again to me, "You need to look into law of attraction." And I was like, that was so weird. Even my friend was like, that was weird. But it wouldn't leave my head. So then on the 6-hour drive home, I just downloaded podcasts. I downloaded anything I could on law of attraction and manifestation. And at first, I was like, I don't know, this seems a little out there. Like, because I come from a science background, right? So I'm like, this seems bizarre. But then I stumbled on Joe Dispenza, who, presents manifestation from a more scientific viewpoint. He explains the quantum physics. And I dove into his work for many months and I started practicing it daily. And then that was when things just amplified even more. Like, slowly, I started to. That's when I really stepped into growing my business. And it was just one stepping stone that came after the other and following them. And then it just grew, 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 grew into something, like you said, even better than I could have imagined.
Interesting. So, okay, so talk to me about, I guess, the process. What is the process of co-creating and using the term co-creation? Certainly, even though it's essentially the same as like law of attraction, it's still different because there's the implication, the overt implication that you're not doing the work alone.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a partnership. So talk to me about the partnership.
Yeah, so I really believe we're working with universal laws that exist, which come from the divine. That's kind of how I view it. And my belief is that when we start to get into states that more represent our true selves, which is an expression of the divine. Basically, there's a universal law that we start to see more of what we're embodying, which basically means what you're feeling, really. So, if you are getting into states that more reflect your divine self, so this includes qualities of infinite intelligence, creativity, love, peace, expansion, abundance. That's our actual true nature because we're an expression of the divine. So, can we actually start to sit in and embody these states? And then, whatever we're embodying, we're going to see more of in our external reality. So, that is how I view it. Now, thinking about a desire, you can bring a desire to mind because this is the process that helps us get into those feeling states, right? You can think of a desire and then you can ask yourself, how would I feel if that desire were my reality? And then usually the answer is things like, oh, I would feel grateful, I would feel joyous, I would feel expansive, which is actually your divine qualities, right? So our desires are actually little nuggets that are helping us step into and feel more of our divine self. And then once you start to embody those states, then I feel universal laws start to, and I don't know how this works. This is where the magic comes in, right? I've racked my brain trying to figure this out. But it's like it's very mysterious because it's like you were on one trajectory and then you start to embody a new energetic state and you shift onto a different trajectory and new connections, synchronicities start to happen, which is very mysterious, but it has to do with quantum physics.
Yes. So what about, okay, what about the desires that we have for things or for roles or experiences that may not be in alignment with our higher purpose, our higher selves, for our highest good? The laws, I know the laws still apply. So if we are experiencing, let's say, a joyous state, because we know that getting that thing is going to make us excited, getting that job is going to, even though it's not in alignment with us, because we're still in quote unquote aligned with the laws, is the universe still going to bring that into our experience? Or is it no, because that's not for your highest good? That's not what you're supposed to be in this life. You're not supposed to have that experience in this life. Does the, I guess, do these laws reject us?
I think it can go one of two ways. I think that you could either start to hit blockage after blockage after blockage, like you're trying to make something happen, but it's just not flowing. And I think that can be that you're thinking that it's for your highest good, but your deepest soul path, it's actually not. And your experience kind of blocks and it's not flowing, right? The other thing that I feel can happen, which has happened to me in a little bit of different ways, is that you can bring it into fruition. And then if it's not fully aligned, and I mean, it's hard for things to always be fully aligned to pure love, right? It's hard for, there's always a little bit of ego and a little bit of different shadows coming into play and just duality from the world. But everything also has cause and effect, right? So if you bring something to fruition that wasn't necessarily coming from pure love, you are going to experience the effect of that as well. So that could show up as challenges, chaos. It's now your reality. It's not what you thought. Like you're like, oh, this doesn't feel as good, or you're running into all these different challenges, or things just aren't panning out. And that could show you that, oh, that wasn't actually a desire for my highest good. And this is kind of how manifestation works as well, is your desires get refined over time because you bring something into fruition and you're like, ooh, that's not quite it. Or you do it for a little bit and then your soul desires something else, right? It's evolving, it's growing, it's refining.
Have you ever tried to manifest something and then you were rerouted elsewhere?
I think that, I think two different examples. One is I feel like one thing that I've tried to manifest, and even it's been on my manifestation for 6.5 years, right? It's coming out on Monday, finally.
Exciting.
But that journey was way longer than I thought. So I had to trust in divine timing with that. And there were lots of bumps and like challenges. And originally I was trying to get traditionally published, and then that didn't pan out in that way. And I got moved on to the self-publishing path. But now I'm in a place where I actually think that that was the path that's better for me. So that was interesting too. Yeah. And then in terms of even love and romance, that's taken, like, I'm still single right now, and I would have, my ego or my, desires would have wanted that to happen sooner. And I've been in relationships, but my soul has known that it's not the right partner as like a lifelong soul partner. So I'm holding the vision. I'm holding what I know my values are, what my truths are, and I am handing it over because it has taken longer than what I would have chosen. But I'm trusting in the highest good.
What if people are in the process of manifesting and similar to what you said, they come up against block after block, obstacles, like nonstop challenges? Many people would take that as, I should stop. This isn't right for me. Apparently, I'm not supposed to do this. I should just give up. What do you think about that?
It can be challenging for sure. And I think part of it is that I think the universe partly also wants to see how badly you do want it. So, are you willing to have the resiliency to move through these challenges? Do you have the strength to be on the path? Like, say someone is wanting to be a leader, right? Being a leader, you need to be able to go through challenges because it's part of entrepreneurship, it's part of leadership. You need to develop certain character traits. I think this is a thing that people don't understand about manifestation as well, is that what will come to you when we put out a manifestation, what's going to come to you is the path to develop you into the person that is suited for that manifestation. So if, say, okay, using leadership is a great example. Say you want to be a leader, but your confidence isn't quite there yet. Life is going to continue to present challenges to you where you're being asked to develop your confidence, right? Because then you're more of a match for that thing.
I see. And many
Yeah.
people certainly do not think about it that way. I will tell you
No, and
that.
I've had it. I've had, trust me, where I'm like, I've even said to on our podcast, I've said to my co-host Lori, even this year for me, the whole last year and into this year, I feel like I've just been like how diamonds are created under pressure, right? And they're just like refined into a diamond. And I literally feel like that's been kind of my last year into this year because my manifestations really took a jump, right? Like, say I was here and I'm using my hands, but like a lower, here are my manifestations on a level four. Well, I jumped up to like level 10 manifestations, like basically like way more expansive, right? The universe is going to be like, okay, if you want that much expansion, we got to refine you. And that's going to come through challenges.
Yes, that's a really great point to make to people. And I think also be careful what you ask for. Be careful what you
I
want,
know what you mean.
because God help
I
you.
know you gotta like, and if it's your soul path, your soul's gonna say, okay, like your soul will have the resiliency. And for anything that isn't your soul path, you won't have the resiliency for it. Like you'll just be like, no, this isn't worth it, right? Like, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Well, Shauna, it's been so great having you on. Your book is called A Light That Shines Through, and it's available on what's the exact date? I'm sorry, is it the 13th?
Monday, yes,
It's the
the
13th.
July 14th.
And the 14th. And where can people find your book?
On Amazon or on my website. So shaunathibodeau.com, or just go to amazon.com or CA and just type in the light that shines through.
And if people want to connect with you, potentially going on a retreat, is that something available this year or do they have to get on a list for next year?
Yeah, not this year. I'm really focusing on the book and my online programs, but there is a list for when events will be coming out, retreats and events in the future.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, Shauna. It was great having you here. And everybody, take care and have a good week ahead. Thank you. Bye-bye.